Welcome back in 96.5 The Fan, Fesco and Dusty. Mac Morey, our executive producer, with you as well today. O's and Royals, 3:38 first pitch. On deck show, 2:30 for Josh Verner. Josh Verner will join us in about 35 minutes.
That's right. Another big day of Vern.
That's right.
Some woman was very excited to not see Vern yesterday. Or I should say not very excited. Was very mad that Vern was not at the watch party yesterday and got all up in Spector's face.
Sometimes you got to be the fall guy, Spec.
Yeah, that's it. That's the way it goes. Oh, yep. Well.
You wear that armor now, my guy.
Mm-hmm.
Don't forget, you can check us out on the live cam today, if you'd like.
Right.
Subscribe. 100 subscribers a day gets us free lunch.
That's right. Absolutely. Subscribe now.
And shout out to Jefferson's. We will all be there again today as the Royals take on the Orioles game 2. Shout out Nick Price and all the fun and great servers out there yesterday. Took care of us.
Yeah, great crowd out there yesterday as well, man. It was so much fun watching with the people yesterday and feeling the emotion and high-fiving and having fun. And, you know, it's great, man. So if you're trying to get out of work early today, you're looking for a place to watch the game, come join us at Jefferson's in Lenexa on 87th Street. You know, I'm sure Alex is still there. But we'll be there around 3:30 for first pitch today. And Alex and Cody will be broadcasting live from 10 to 2. So get on over to Jefferson's and watch the game with us and hang out. Say hi.
We will dive back into the Royals. We owe it to you, but we've done that for about an hour now. And there was some chatter going on yesterday. That's some chowder that was going on up northeast.
Right.
But some chatter yesterday with two wide receivers. One local, one could be local very soon. The Rashee Rice information is quite astonishing to me.
Why?
Because the way it was so doom and gloom when it happened.
Yeah.
And I'm just going off past events and following this team and the information that normally is given. And Andy Reid just looked absolutely miserable, describing the interview to Tracy Wolfson in that half game or the halftime speech. And he just basically said, yeah, it's not good. And just seemed very deflated. And then you move on to the next day and it's like, it's feared to be an ACL. You go on to the next day. Well, we're going to get some more evaluation.
Right.
And then you do your thing, Mr. Fesco, and, you know, dip, dive, dodge, duck, and dodge, and find out more information that there's going to be more evaluation, and we'll get more clarity come Monday.
Come Monday,
great, yeah. Jimmy Buffett song.
Yeah, exactly. One of the best of all time, and it'll be all right come Monday, hopefully. And,
you think?
And well, that's the interesting
you're hearing
part
different
right
things
now.
Too.
Yeah, here's the thing, and I was sent the video, and I shared it with you guys yesterday of a doctor talking about, you know, kind of what's going on with the Rashee Rice thing, and I was given that by a source, and they go, this is pretty accurate as to what's going on right now, and really the gist of it is, you don't need 2 minutes and 42 seconds of a doctor speaking in all kinds of doctor terms. I'll just kind of sum it up for you. They're basically waiting for the swelling to go down before they can get a true read of the MRI. And that's logical. And you talk to anybody, you got to wait till the swelling goes down before you can see what's going to go on inside the knee. And there is going to be further testing that needs to be done with Rashee Rice's knee. Like, there's going to be anesthesia used. They're going to stick a thing in there and look all around and make sure everything is okay. And you know, whatnot, but they can't do that until the swelling goes down. And I think that's where people are kind of getting upset, wanting to put the cart before the horse a little bit. And this is also part of the reason too, Dusty. And I realize this now in my 47th year plus on earth, is that we've got a situation where we want the answer right away, right? As fans and as media and everybody and fantasy owners and gamblers and all this kind of stuff, we want a definitive answer right away. A lot of times there are a definitive answer right away. And a lot of the times the teams cover things up and don't tell you exactly what's going on and all that. But this is one of those where they gave us kind of an answer right away, and now they have to backtrack on that answer because they're not quite sure. He's going to miss some time. We all know that. But we don't know the extent of this injury until the swelling goes down. Is it a bruise? Is it a PCL? Is it a strain? So until that swelling goes down, which they're hoping by Monday, then they can get the camera in there, look around, and see exactly what's going on with his knee. And I think that's the way it kind of works with everybody. You always hear, you know, from people who are going into the hospital, well, got to wait till the swelling goes down before we can get in there. And that's a real thing. So it's going to take a couple of days to get the swelling down. just forget about Rashee Rice right now, right? Because he's not playing this weekend, probably won't play for a couple of weeks. But until that swelling goes down, we're not going to truly know what's going on inside that knee. And I appreciate them taking that approach, because what if it isn't torn and it's just a bone bruise or something like that? And everybody reacted like, in there with surgery. And they're like, wait a second here, there's nothing wrong with this knee. So just give it some time and wait till that swelling goes down and make sure you get it right.
The other thing that was about wide receivers yesterday is Devontae Adams' name was getting used a lot.
A lot yesterday. Yeah. Well, he's asked for a trade, and then you got the coach of the Raiders liking Instagram posts with a guy saying he'd like to be traded.
Yeah, and this is the audio of Devontae Adams yesterday about being a Raider.
And and what I'm hearing is that a lot of people think you may never play another down as a Raider. What would you say to that?
All I can control is this talk we're having right here, and then after we're done with this, all I can control is the next thing that I'm on to. So I'm gonna get up in a minute and get a nice workout in, and that's all I can control.
So there you go. I mean, obviously he wants out. But he wants out. The Raiders clearly are willing to trade Devontae Adams, because if you're trying to establish a program, and look, I'm an Antonio Pierce fan. Him liking an Instagram post, think about it this way, the say it out loud test, you know, would Andy Reid sit around liking Instagram posts of anything? No. He's got other things that he needs to worry about.
Instagram.
And he, exactly, right? Like he's doing things that a head coach should be doing.
Right.
I always see stuff like this, and I go back to Gunther Cunningham reading message boards and finding out he was getting fired via message boards. Mm. You're a head coach in the NFL. How do you have time to sit on message boards? All these coaches act like they've got so much to do, which is true. Antonio Pierce is on there liking Instagram posts yesterday. Like, that doesn't bode well for him as a head coach in the NFL. So, but Devontae Adams is available. Will he come to the Chiefs? That's another question. Will the Raiders trade him to the Chiefs? I saw a story with the Chiefs being one of the teams that could get him, obviously. And then they'd have to pay more than anybody else. They'd have to pay a premium on that because he's a division rival. But when we're looking to go out and get a wide receiver, here's what's going to happen. And I talked to somebody in the league about this yesterday, about where the Chiefs are going to go and what they're going to do. Somebody with some pretty good information as to kind of the thinking at Arrowhead. And the original kind of baseline of where we're at right now is patience. And I know nobody wants patience right now, right? All you need is a little patience at times, right? So you got to wait to see where the injury is, but you also have to have a little patience. There's no rush to judgment right now, rush to make a move because Rashee Rice went down. Mm-hmm. Here's where we stand, though. We're going into week 5 of the NFL season. Every team is still technically alive, right? Like every team, no matter what their record is right now, unless you're like 0-5, which is there anybody 0-5 right now? I don't
Carolina.
No, they got that one win.
No.
So nobody's 0-5, but Carolina
would be 0-5, be 0-4.
0-4, I mean.
No, I don't believe so.
So like, but Carolina stinks, Cincinnati stinks, a couple of bottom feeders out there right now. New England, but
Giants,
but they all still feel like they're alive at this point in time, because also it's a business. If you start unloading your players after week 4 or week 5, you're telling your fan base we're done. They're not going to spend money on tickets, and everybody's going to cash it in from a fan base standpoint. Mm-hmm. So you got to keep that in mind as well. And so everybody's still alive. When teams start to realize that they're out of the race and they pick up the phone and call you, it's much easier to get a deal done. Because if Brett Veach were to go around and start calling teams right now, the offer is like, hey, are you interested in trading, let's just say, Malik Nabers? Yeah, 6 first-round draft picks, please, right? Like, what they're going to ask for in return is going to be a lot higher at this point in time than in a couple of weeks from now when teams start to realize that they're out of the race. And the cap does factor in. I think the spot rack said the Chiefs have $4 million available under the cap. That's got to last them the rest of the season too, right? Like, so if you go out and spend it all on one player and then something else happens, now you have no cap money to go out and acquire somebody else. And so that involves a lot of work as well. So I think what they're going to do is they're going to collect information. They're going to find out what they could potentially do, wait on this Rashee Rice diagnosis, hopefully coming up on Monday, find out where they are with him, and then start to put a plan into place. The other thing is, and I know Andy said the other day, it's easier to join this team in season from a playbook standpoint. It's still bringing in somebody from outside the organization and expecting them to hit the ground running. The expectation would be wild and crazy. And a lot of these guys you bring in midseason just never get it and never catch on and end up being kind of a bust. And so we're all in kind of wait and see mode right now, but that's kind of where the Chiefs stand. They're kind of sitting around waiting to see what happens, waiting for some teams to lose some more games. That's why I think Tennessee losing on Monday could have been very, would have helped, right?
Yes.
Then they're sitting at 0-4. Nothing's going well down there. Now maybe a DeAndre Hopkins becomes a little bit more acquirable. And
even a Tyler Boyd, just a name from there, yeah.
Just somebody like that. So that's kind of where we are right now. I know everybody wants that immediate move. And, you know, we had some fun yesterday talking about, hey, go get Tyreek Hill, right? Yeah. What the hell? Yeah. You might as well, right? And whatnot. But the reality is you got to kind of just wait a little bit until some of these teams start to fall out of the race. They're looking to unload. They realize their lot in life. They're calling you for draft picks and offering up wide receivers.
I mean, the Browns still think they're good. I saw this morning the Browns are looking to trade for Devontae. That's a bottom feeder.
That's
1-3 team that should know they're done. But like you said, they still have hope.
They still
think they're overvaluing themselves.
They've
got to wait for them to know that they suck.
Right. And that's kind of like what a lot of teams do. I actually heard a good trade destination for Devontae Adams and the guys on before us. I think it was LeVar Arrington who said the Giants could be a landing space for Devontae Adams to pair him with Malik Nabers. And I'm like, wow. I don't hate that idea, right? Like you bring him in and you're not just making a move for today. That's a longer term type of move as well. And there's obviously a lot of money involved in bringing Devontae Adams in. But hey, we've seen with this Chiefs team, guys, nothing is off the table. The three-peat is very much something that they want to accomplish. And if they get down to it and they feel like they need to make a big time move, I wouldn't hesitate. And I wouldn't expect them not to make a big time move.
We'll get back to our poll on X, but first we'll get into Max Packs and Bob's Bottom Feeders here on Fesco and Dusty on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.
You're listening to Fesco and Dusty on your new home for Chiefs football, 96.5 The Fan.
Welcome back.
I'm not sure what you're laughing at because so much I just like to be laughing at in that break.
Welcome back to 96.5 The Fan, FM dial, cruising right along. Royals up 1-0 in this wild card series. Wild card series when the team wins the first game, 8-0.
Right.
In the short little sample that we have, but either way, gotta love your odds.
You gotta love the odds, man. And look, in this day and age, we're all playing the odds, right? I don't think there's anything to worry about right now as we move forward with this. This series is over, in my opinion. You win today. You drive up I-95 for 3 hours. You get to New York tonight. You take the off day on Thursday and Friday and get ready to beat the Yankees on Saturday with Cole Reagans on the mound. Like, winning yesterday's ball game was so impactful for what this Royals team wants to do this postseason, and that's the way you're going to win games. You're going to sweat them out. You're going to sit there and, like everybody was cheering every strike, too. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what I like about postseason baseball.
Some chanting
strike for every single pitch that was thrown. I think that was Max Date when I walked in, you were talking, you were all like cuddled up, and so I didn't know what was going on over there.
I can't blame her, man.
Yeah, I can't either. You're a very cute young lad. and so, like, she was chanting strike on every play, but like, you're watching every pitch, and every pitch matters, and every out that you get is, you know, you start with 27 and then it's 26 and then it's 25 and then it's 24 and then it's 23, and I mean, like, you're counting down the outs and you're getting excited and everybody's fired up, and you know, people are outside smoking cigarettes like it's going out of style. There was a guy smoking in his car with a propane tank yesterday in the parking lot. I thought he was going to blow the place up. And so, like, everybody's fired up and excited, and postseason baseball is just different, man. Like, everything is different. And once they scored that run and Bobby knocked that base runner in, that was it. That's all she said and wrote for that game. That's all you needed in that game yesterday, and you found a way to, you know, to hold on and get that win. That was a great style of postseason baseball. And for those who are coming back to baseball for the first time since probably 15 or 16, imagine how fast these games are now. Oh, yep. My God.
How great
is it, the pace of these playoff games?
They go
from 4 hours to less than three. It's fantastic.
Before we get into the poll question and Max Pack, Jesse Morse, MD, sports medicine physician that covers the NFL injuries for Injury Experts, regenerative medicine of knee, shoulder, and hip injuries, tweeted 10 hours ago, "As you are setting your waiver wires tonight, do not drop Rashee Rice."
No, do not drop him off your team. No, No.
And then maybe some other information you didn't know you needed. If you turn the Chicago Bulls logo over, it looks like a robot having its way with a crab. You can never unsee it.
So it's true.
I'll be checking that out during the break.
All righty. We'll be doing that as well.
No, you can hop over to the Fan 965 on X, formerly known as Twitter. Check out our poll question today. That was quite simple. It just basically said, when you put these two together for duos, Bobby Witt Jr. and Cole Reagans, Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce, who will end with more playoff wins?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Patrick and Travis have a 14 game lead as the Reagans. Right. Bobby Jr. Just started off theirs yesterday with one. So far, 132 votes, 75% say Patrick and Kelce.
That's stunning. That shows you have no faith in the Royals, because all you really need to do is go on a 2-year run. If you go on a run like 14 and 15, you're going to pass Patrick and Kelce in 2 years. You just are, because it takes 13 wins to win a world championship in baseball, right? So you've got one under your belt right now, 12 more to go. If the Royals were to win the World Series, they'd be like 4 games behind Mahomes and Kelce in total playoff wins, assuming that Mahomes and Kelce, you know, win the Super Bowl this year. That puts them at 18 with the week off and the bye and all that. That gives you 18 total playoff wins. If the Royals win the World Series this year, Bobby and Reagans will have 13. That puts you just 5. That's another round next year in the postseason. So I think when you start to think about wins in playoff wins, if you have faith in Bobby and Reagans of this being the beginning of a dynasty like I do, I think you got to take the baseball. I'm stunned that that poll is as skewed as it is.
Me too. I think it's a math question at that point too as well.
I think it's also people probably not reading it properly.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly.
You know, or thinking properly about that, right?
When you see playoff wins and you see Mahomes and Kelce, you're like, oh, okay, Mahomes and Kelce.
Yeah, right. Like,
but
you get 13 in one postseason. Exactly. If you win the World Series, you have won and come from the wild card, you have won 13 games to get to that point.
12 more. Let's go.
All right, Mac.
It's time for Max Pack.
Brioche, baby. Let's go. Top 5 teams that could hoist a Lombardi trophy headed into week 5 of the NFL season. We will start at number 1. I'm going to start at number 5 this week.
Okay.
The Bills.
Because you're an apologist for Josh Allen.
Yes.
Finally played a good team. How'd he look the other day?
Listen.
Yes. Derrick Henry was him.
Was. Yeah, Josh Allen did nothing to stop Derrick Henry.
You're right. I really need him to start tackling Derrick Henry more.
Hey, I mean, if you're going to be a team player, man, Mahomes out here making tackles.
Oh,
geez, too soon. I hope the Bills don't see the Ravens in all seriousness in the playoffs. I guess I hope they do. If I'd like them to lose, I'd rather play the Ravens, I think, than the Bills in the playoffs. So I hope the Bills see Baltimore.
Beat all of them.
Because Buffalo can't beat Baltimore. The spine of that defense is weak. That's what the Ravens attack with their run game. The Bills will not be able to stop the Ravens. Doesn't matter if it's week 4 or week 17, week 18. Lions at number 4. Listen, they can run on anyone with the ability for the big plays through the air as well. Something that the Ravens, I think, lack. We'll talk about them in a little bit more. But they're 4 right now on this list because of where we're at in the season.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, in my heart, they're number 2 right now.
Okay, so first of all, how much has changed in your mind with Jared Goff being perfect the other night and them wearing those black uniforms?
Gosh, those black uniforms. The
helmet for me.
Oh, gosh. The helmet was great,
the
right?
The black lion with, like, the shimmery blue. I was like, dude.
Oh, my God. Those are just sexy uniforms.
Flacco looks 10 years younger in those things.
How awesome were those things, right?
Like, amazing.
So somebody was complaining on X, formerly Twitter, obviously, right? And the one thing that I didn't know about those uniforms, those are actually throwbacks. They wore those in like the 50s.
Wow.
Yeah, I had no idea.
Ahead of their time.
Yeah. Seriously. That was an actual throwback. And I'm like, I had no idea. I heard them talking about it. I'm like, that's an amazing uniform. They should wear that all the time. I love Dan Campbell, and I've been on Jared Goff for the last couple of years now. I think he's one of those underrated guys. He is this generation's Aaron Rodgers to me, where you could ask Josh all the time. We would talk about great quarterbacks, and I'd be like, oh, yeah, and then Aaron Rodgers. I always forget about Aaron Rodgers. I think people are always forgetting about Jared Goff right now.
I think Goff's really good. He's got a top 5 O-line. They've got great weapons, top 5 running back duo, and that defense actually is pretty solid with, you know, you mentioned him yesterday, Dusty. Aiden Hutchinson, he's creeping up that DPOI ranking. So Lions at number 4 there. Ravens at 3. again, they can run on anyone. But again, I don't feel that they have that explosive passing game that the Lions have the ability to kind of uncork. So I'm looking for that a little bit from, you know, Zay Flowers, get Andrews and Likely back in. It feels like we haven't heard Likely's name since week one,
right,
about that big toe. So I'm waiting for them to kind of get that passing game. But it's still, this team's elite and that defense is good. I think they've still taken a step back, but I'm keeping them at number three right now. I trust the Ravens.
Okay.
Vikings at two. Defense is real. Kevin O'Connell's amazing. He's figured it out. I think he's an elite head coach. You know, we saw him elevate Kirk Cousins. We're seeing him do that and more with Sam Darnold.
Yeah, he's been great.
It's been amazing. Yeah. I mean, statistically, he's even better than Kirk was. They just got Addison back. You can obviously see that's helping them in the passing game, along with Justin Jefferson. And I just think, you know, they got a good defense. They blitz a lot. Brian Flores is aggressive. I just don't think the league is that strong. I think the Vikings know who they are, and they have an identity, and they're playing like it. So I'm going to have them at number two right now.
Okay.
I don't care if it's Sam Darnold.
No, they're undefeated. Yeah. They're the only other undefeated team in the NFL right now.
Exactly. And in a league, quarterback play is kind of weak.
Yeah.
Who's your MVP, Josh Allen or Sam Darnold?
Well, I think Sam Darnold.
Right now,
he's undefeated.
It has to be Sam Darnold, but Josh is better. It's fine. Chiefs at one. Injuries mounting, but this team still has the best quarterback in the league, the best coach in the league, maybe the best offensive line in the league, a top five defense, and by far the best defensive coordinator in the NFL. Rashee Rice, hope you come back. Hope it's not an ACL tear, but this team can do it no matter what.
Aseel Tyree, I think is how you say it.
My fault.
Yes.
Aseel Tyree.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
All right.
Comebacks.
I got my bottom feeders.
Yes.
Five teams that I think just suck.
How many are in the AFC West?
On the list? None this week. No, none. I don't have any AFC West foes in the list.
Has 32 changed?
I don't know. I can't remember what I did last week. We're being honest here, right? Number 32 for me this week has to be the Miami Dolphins. They put on the worst display of anybody. It's like, you know, when Willie Mays Hayes says, I'm going to put on a hitting display, and he hits the knob of the bat and it falls down. That's the Miami Dolphins right now. Mm-hmm. They're Willie Mays Hayes in spring training trying to hit. Coming in at number 31 are the Tennessee Titans. I have them. I don't care what they do. They're not a very good football team, so they're coming in at number 31.
And that was Monday Night Football. Least.
Yeah, that was your Monday night.
Wow,
we had two of those games on Monday Night Football. Thank God we had that one.
Yeah.
Coming in at number 30, the Carolina Panthers are on that list. The Cleveland Browns come in at number 29. And the number 28, I think, is going to be a surprise for people. The Orioles, they suck.
Do you think Cleveland can get out of there if they let Jameis Winston play quarterback?
Yeah, absolutely. You're only as good in football as your quarterback is. And I used to say that about college football, right?
Yeah.
Like if in college back in the day, you found yourself a quarterback, you were going to win some football games.
No doubt.
I still think it's the same way.
That's why KU sucks.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it's why when they were good with Todd Reesing, they had a quarterback. It's not that hard, right?
And Bean.
You find yourself a quarterback, you're going to have an opportunity to do well. And that's why the Chiefs are on top. They're on top because of Patrick Mahomes and whatnot. What was your question? Oh, if they get Jameis Winston.
Yeah, can they get out of that bottom?
Yeah, absolutely.
I think they've been there now 2 or 3 weeks.
They stink, and they have a bad quarterback who's a horrible human. So, I don't know. It's kind of where I look at it. Like, Deshaun Watson is...
cut and dry.
take the massage nonsense out, but you can't because that's who he is as a human being.
Yeah.
He's not a very good football player.
No, he's terrible.
Mahomes broke him.
God, he's awful.
He thought playing that guitar was cute in that playoff game until it wasn't.
Yeah.
Until the Chiefs ran out of fireworks.
How many people were on that Houston sideline that were broken in that game and never resurfaced? Like, I know Bill O'Brien's at Boston College right now, but that's a big fall from being the head coach in the NFL.
DeAndre Hopkins was never the same.
Never the same again. Winston was never the same again.
Winston? Watson?
Watson, I think. Yeah. I don't know why I said Winston. Winston Watson.
Winston's never going to be the same.
Well, yeah.
I mean, it's tough, man. Like, that's what happens. You know?
Watson, yes!
Sorry, I missed that earlier.
Happy birthday to our friend Gene Watson as well today. Celebrating number 55.
Happy birthday to the Cole Reagan's birthday.
That's right, yeah. Because of Gene, we got Cole.
And they're both 55.
That's right.
Number and age.
I think Gene's 50. I don't know.
Oh, well. He'll let you know if he's not. That's a quick always response. If you get the birthday age wrong, people are very quick to correct you.
Yeah.
You know what? 39, 37.
37.
Take it easy.
I had a conversation with somebody the other day, and I said, I'm almost 48. And somebody goes, pause with this, almost 48. Your birthday's not until April. You're not even to your half birthday yet. I'm like, whoa, what are we, 9? Like,
what? Half.
So, yeah, that comes this month. I'll expect gifts.
Some people will say the biggest play yesterday was the Bobby Wood Jr. single that knocked in Mikel Garcia. Some people would say Bobby Wood Jr. was the hero. No. Sometimes it's, yes, you got the run in. Michael Garcia did his job. Michael Garcia, unsung hero yesterday.
Unsung hero.
Remember we talked about that, guys? We said somebody's going to be an unsung hero in these playoffs.
Yeah.
Yesterday was Michael Garcia.
Right.
Two walks.
He had a terrible September, too, and for was sure. brilliant yesterday.
And got on base, stole second. Perfect. Got to third. Bobby Witt Jr. base hit, scores a run. Michael Garcia scored the run. Bobby Witt Jr. knocked him in. And then Cole Reagans had the biggest play of the game yesterday.
Here's the 2-2. Swing and a miss. And he got him with a breaking ball down and away. And in five innings, Cole Reagans has not allowed a run. And he has pitched around a leadoff double. And in this inning, first and third and one out. And he picks up Melendez.
Big, big, big moment in that game yesterday. I mean,
that was the biggest pop outside of the RBI single, because runs are going to get you more excited than maybe a strikeout. But that was yesterday the moment where I was like, okay, Cole Reagans is that guy.
Right.
You know, the demeanor of Tom Glavine and the hose of Jacob DeGrom mixed together is Cole Reagans. Because left-handed pitcher kind of has that demeanor of Tom Glavine. Nothing's going to really bother him. Going to give up some, you know, hits, whatever. Give up, you know, had first and third, one out.
One out.
Strikeout, strikeout.
Gave off a leadoff double and,
right.
And allowed nothing. Like, how many times a leadoff double, you're like, oh, that's a guarantee run, right? Like,
right.
Especially in the postseason, again, why aren't you bunting that guy over to third and hoping for a sac fly? Like, the manager of the Baltimore Orioles was as bad at managing a game as I've seen in a long time. Like,
since the Super Bowl.
Yeah, right. Like as bad as Kyle Shanahan was. I mean, you could argue who was the worst coach, Kyle Shanahan taking the ball in overtime. And I think his name is Brandon Hyde in Baltimore as the manager, or that guy yesterday pitching to Bobby Witt, or having a runner on second when you know it's a low scoring game, not bunting that dude over and hoping for a sac fly or whatever. Like, there were so many moments in that game yesterday where you could directly pin on the manager. And one of those for me, and I think for all of us, is when they took Cole Reagans out of the game.
Yeah, you were very sour at the moment.
I was, because it was before we knew the calf injury happened. So put yourself in that framework of before knowing the calf injury what happened. What was your reaction? Because as soon as he took him out of the game, Spector showed me a tweet from somebody that said, Kjosted. Q-U-O-S-T-E-D. Kjosted. And I was dying. I'm like, that's hysterical, right? Like, somebody came up with that. I was laughing, probably Ned's burner account and whatnot. But I was mad, because before we knew the injury of Cole Reagans and the sore calf, I'm like, here we go. This is what I was fearing. You're taking this guy out who's cruising along because analytics tells you to do so. And that wasn't the case. The injury popped up and we were all good. But in that moment, I think we were all mad that Cole Reagans was coming out of the game. Everybody was going, what are we doing here? He's only got 80 pitches. And then immediately it came out that it was a calf injury. But I think in the moment when we first saw it, I don't think there was a happy camper at Jefferson's yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, we were just confused because he was dealing, right?
Yeah.
It was six innings, four hits, eight strikeouts, zero walks. And, you know, zero earned. And you're like, oh, just let him go. I think he was only at 76 pitches.
I think he finished with 80 pitches.
80 pitches, something like that. And to me, it was, you know, obviously you had to kind of like, you know, so, and then all of a sudden they were showing Reagans on TV talking. And
well, they showed him. It looked like he was angry.
Like he was frustrated.
Yeah.
And then I'm sitting next to Alex and he's like, it's a calf strain. It's a calf strain. So I'm like, all right, hey, Bob, he's injured. You're like, okay. And then you got clarification at the end from Cotrero in the post-game interview, which we'll have Matt Cotrero here on at 9 o'clock here on Fesco and Dusty, 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports. But I thought this was interesting because our boss sent us some topics that he liked, and I kind of piggybacked on a little bit of one of them, and I said I thought the interesting thing in the post-game interview were two things. One, Salvador Perez coming out to the mound with Lucas Hirsay in the ninth, being like, hey, man, you're fine.
Mm-hmm.
We got this. Trust in me. Throw your pitches. Nothing's going to get by me. Know you're powerful. You'll be all right. I don't know if that's what he said, but I would assume it's something along those lines.
Or he looked at him and goes, throw an effing strike.
Yeah. Screw your curveball, Ricky. Throw him the heater.
Throw the heater.
And so that was a big moment. And then I thought it was also kind of undershadowed because it took me back to the beginning of the year. And Speck made a good point. Managers aren't important in 162 games.
10 games a year, anybody in baseball will tell you the manager affects a game.
Yeah,
10 out of 162.
And this is one of those moments yesterday where I thought the manager was important, because Cotrero said in his post game that Cole had walked by him and said something. He didn't quite hear it. And then he took him down to the tunnel,
Cole Reagans took the manager down to the tunnel and said, hey, I've got cramps in my calf. I got through the last batter, but I could feel it for the last couple.
Right.
You got to get me out. I need to, I'm done. And not in so many words, but to say, I don't have 100% of myself out there anymore, and I want this team to win.
And that's amazing that he did that, because what if Cole Reagans goes back out there, gives up a four spot, right? And then after the game goes, yeah, I was pitching through a cramp, and we're all like, what? You know, like the reaction would have been completely different,
and
right?
It's like, why didn't he trust his manager to know that he could have that conversation? Goes back to when Will Smith wasn't him.
Right.
Right after that Baltimore series, he goes into Contreras, office.
Week one.
And just goes, hey, Skip. It ain't me. I got to get something figured out. Let somebody else do this. And, we see the text line all the time. Q gets a lot of flack from, people wanting him to bunt, not play Adam Frazier, not do this. Mm-hmm. Look, that was Quintero's first playoff win, and he managed that game as if he had been there multiple times as the head skipper in a dugout.
Hey, because you're never the head guy until you're the head guy, right? It's one thing to be a bench coach and offer your advice.
Like JJ, too.
Yeah, exactly. You know, like JJ all these years offering advice to Dayton, now he's in that chair. Hey, there you go. Now you got to make those final decisions. Right. It's a lot different, when it's up to you. I mean, and I think we've all been in those spots before. It's easy to give advice. Okay, it's very easy. Somebody says, I got a problem. What do you think? You give them that advice. It's very difficult to take your own advice, right? You talk to friends all the time about stuff and say, hey, try this or try that. And then you look at yourself and you go, I'm not doing any of that myself. So why am I telling somebody else to do that? But it's always easier to give advice. So as a bench coach, a hitting coach, pitching coach, whatever it is, you have those conversations. But at the end of the day, you're like, it's your call, bro.
Yeah.
you get to make this decision. And in his first time of making these decisions, I thought Q was great yesterday. And I thought Brandon Hyde for the Baltimore Orioles was a colossal disaster. And I'll be listening to a little Baltimore radio just to kind of get a flavor of what they're saying and what they were saying yesterday and a little bit more today. If they're not crushing their manager for losing that game and blaming him, I don't know what else they're talking about in Baltimore yesterday, because that was a colossal F up by the manager of that team on two separate occasions, not bunting and moving a runner to third base with nobody out, and then allowing Bobby Witt to beat you. Like, did you just wake up from amnesia and say, who's this guy that's hitting? Oh, okay, we'll pitch to him with a runner on when we got a guy with a busted up finger who's done nothing today behind him with two outs. Like, that's a manager that blew a game for Baltimore yesterday.
No doubt about it. We'll talk to Josh Verner about those situations and the situation today on the other side on Fesco and Dusty on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.
You're listening to Fesco and Dusty on your new home for Royals baseball. 96.5, The Fan.
We're where you want to be. Baseball with the Royals. If you want to be.
Having a great time.
If you want to be.
Loving the fun.
If you want to see all of the excitement. This is the place and we're the one. If you want to be. Yelling like crazy. For the guys you love to see. Come on out and join us, this is the place you want to be. We're where you want to be. Baseball with the Royals. We're where you want to be. Baseball with the Royals.
If you want to see
the best of the big leagues.
You want to be
loving the day. Come share the excitement of the stolen bases and double plays.
Sing along. This is where it happens.
I want to see that guy waving everybody over.
Baseball, this is the place you want to be. We're where you want to be. Baseball with the Royals.
Where do you think they recorded that? Like in some, like that, that's got the impressions of like, you know, some like old timey radio studio with like a big microphone in the middle and everybody just kind of standing around singing and
100%.
Doing their part, you know, like I don't want to say barbershop quartet, but whatever it is, man, people love that song. It just reminds them of good things. I've never heard anybody, and this is very rare in this business, say, stop playing that song, Baseball with the Royals. People love that song. It reminds them of the 80s, I guess. And then it also reminds them of 14 and 15. And we played the hell out of that song then. And everybody wants to recapture that magic of 14 and 15. I've been telling people lately, it's not 14 and 15 anymore. This is a new version. This is a new team. This is a new atmosphere. This is a new existence of Royals baseball. We got an ace and an MVP, a Cy Young Award winner and an MVP at the top of this rotation and lineup. I mean, it's just, it's really good right now. And yesterday was glorious, Dusty. Glorious day yesterday. We're about to do it again in about 12 hours. Less than that now, I guess.
It's a new day. Yes, it is. And Josh Verner is with us once again, our Royals insider, whose on-deck show starts today at 2:30. Mr. Vern, how are you after that fantastic Game 1 win?
I'm doing well. We're extending the on-deck show. We're doing a full hour today. We're starting that bad boy up at 2:00.
Oh, how much did Carrington pay you so he doesn't have to come in? Because, you know, Cody was real quick to tell everybody on the text thread the other day, Carrington had 30 minutes.
Well, I'll remind you. Just go back and listen to what you just asked.
Yes.
How much did Carrington pay me? Nothing.
You kidding me?
You kidding me?
A couple of chewed pens and a phone charger that's not
go
even
pick
his.
Up a chewed pen off the floor. It's all yours, big guy.
Oh, my goodness. Yesterday was fantastic, though, Vern. That's a playoff baseball game in a nutshell. Like, if you're going to describe postseason baseball to somebody, to me, that was yesterday's game.
Yeah, it's one of those games where, depending on your vantage point, you can make a case that so many different aspects of the game were the game, right? The Royals superstar came through with the big hit with a runner in scoring position. Baltimore's did not. You guys just hit on the managerial matchup between Cutrero and Brandon Hyde. I can make a case that base running made the difference. After that one-out double in the fifth inning, Urias should have scored on that bloop off of the bat of Cedric Mullins, but he gets a poor read off the bat. He doesn't make it home, and poor base running by Baltimore picks up some poor defense from MJ Melendez. And on the flip side, Michael Garcia steals second base. He's advanced to third on a nice, productive out by Michael Massey, and then you score what turns out to be the game-winning run. We could talk about the pitching and how Cole Reagans was just a little bit better than Corbin Burns. Yeah, it's a perfect playoff game because every single aspect matters and every single aspect played a role in a game that finished 1-0. Everything was interesting yesterday.
Yeah, it really was. And now, you know, you play the odds. Every team that wins the first wild card game advances. It's never not happened. Small sample size, I know. But you got Lugo going on the mound today against an Orioles team who, you know, the last half of the season, they just haven't been that good.
Correct. Yeah, And only once have we seen this best of three series even get to a game three.
Oh, wow.
You know, we'll see if that happens somewhere around the sport over the course of today. But listen, Zach Eflin's a vet. He's been to the postseason before with Philly, last year with Tampa, was really good out of the bullpen with the Phillies, didn't have a great showing last year as a starter with Tampa. Seth Lugo, and this is where, you know, I think the Royals moving forward will be able to flex their muscle, right? Their game two starter, their game three starter. I mean, unless you run into Philadelphia in the World Series, I think the Royals have the better number two starter. They have the better number three starter if needed tomorrow in Michael Wacha. And man, we alluded to this yesterday. How tight is that place going to be today?
Yeah.
How nervous are those fans going to be when they show up to Camden Yards? Against Baltimore has lost 9 straight playoff games. They won 100 games last year, get swept. World Series or bust this season. They could get swept with both games coming at home. Brandon Hyde's job suddenly is on the line, right? Last time Baltimore had a ready-made team, Buck Showalter screwed it up in the end, and now Brandon Hyde looks like he might be doing the same thing. That first inning could end the game, right? One big swing from a Massey, a Bobby, a Vinny, a Salvi, and then Seth Lugo takes over, and that entire fan base, the 41,000 that show up today, are going to be stone silent.
Yeah, no doubt about it. What did you think of him pitching to Bobby Witt Jr. with 2 outs? I thought that was one of the worst managerial decisions I think I've ever seen in the playoffs. Like, how stupid are you not to pitch to the guy with the bum thumb with 2 outs?
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it yesterday. I can't believe anybody's going to allow Bobby Witt Jr. to beat you. After the game, when asked about it, Brandon Hyde said, you know, Corbin Burns is pitching so well, I'm going to let him make the decision of who he pitches to and who he doesn't.
Mm.
You know, Corbin Burns needs to be better than that, right? You can't allow Bobby to beat you. If you know he's sitting cutter, if you've thrown him a first-pitch cutter every single at-bat thus far, make sure your first-pitch cutter here in this big at-bat, make sure it's off the plate. Corbin Burns knows better than that, but in a situation like this, yeah, Bob, I think you're right. Yeah. The manager needs to step in and step in between the lions, right? Because that's what it is. Bobby and Corbin Burns are two lions going at it. You need to tell one lion, hey, you can attack this next batter, but we're not going to let you fight this lion. And I hate blaming the manager, especially when the Royals won. I like to make it about the Royals, but I can't argue with you. No, you can't let Bobby Witt Jr. beat you in a scoreless game, and that's exactly what Brandon Hyde allowed yesterday. But you're right. And then, you know, late in the game, when Ryan O'Hearn drew that leadoff walk in the ninth inning, I was surprised no pinch hitter, or pinch runner, rather, for O'Hearn. You know, I'm looking for their Dairon Blanco to come in and try to rip a bag off of Lucas Urseg. Bad job by them, but I like to highlight the execution of this Royals team.
But managing a baseball game at this point in time, Vern, is a little bit like being a parent, in my opinion. Like, you give your kids the rope and the leeway to do what they want, but there are times where you need to intervene and go, okay, we're not doing that today, right? And yeah. and it felt like, to me, Quatrero managed the game yesterday, and Brandon Hyde just said, you know what, I'm getting hammered on a Friday night, find your own way home.
But again, the execution, like to me, when Q let Chris Bubich face Jordan Westberg in the eighth inning after he walked Gunnar Henderson, I would have brought Lucas Urseg in there to face the ready Westberg. He decides to leave Bubich in. Bubich gives up a single. It's first and second with two outs. Then he goes to Urseg, and Urseg gets the inning-ending 6-3 ground out on a great play by Bobby Witt Jr. If Bobby doesn't make that play, if Urseg doesn't make that pitch, if that ball falls in the outfield and the game's tied up, all of a sudden Q didn't have that masterclass that we're calling it today.
One of the things that might have gone unnoticed, maybe not by a lot, but I thought one of the key moments in that game yesterday, Vern, was the captain. Speaking of Lions, that's one of those things where the captain trotted out to the mound. He's been doing it all year. You go talk to your closer, and you know, you have a few words, and you know, put the ball in his hand and say, go get this guy and trust what you have behind you and what you have in front of you with me behind the plate. Big moment yesterday. Really calmed Urseg down and then got out of that eighth inning.
Yeah, five straight balls from Lucas Urseg after he walks Ryan O'Hearn. Now, you know, that ninth inning, Urseg was hurt and then helped by the home plate umpire. I thought that ball four call was shaky, and then I thought the strike three call against Adley Rutschman was shaky as well.
Makeup call, we'll take it.
Yeah, I'll happily take it. But Dusty, 100% right about Salvador Perez, and, you know, you look at that lineup yesterday, you look at who performed yesterday, for as many vets that were brought in this offseason, for as many postseason experienced veterans that were brought in at the trade deadline or in the waiver claims, you look at who was at the center of everything. You know, on the mound, it's Reagans, Long, Bubich, Urseg, all making their playoff debuts. You score that run in the sixth inning because of Michael and Massey and Bobby all making their playoff debuts. But the intangibles that you're pointing out there, Salvi coming out to let Lucas Urseg know, man, your stuff plays. What are you doing? Get in the zone and let's get out of here. Urseg, 1-2-3, strikes out Rutschman, gets Kowser, and punches out Kerstead to finish off the game. Salvi now 23-9 in the postseason. He's hit safely in 20 of his 32 playoff games, and going in against a guy like Zach Eflin after taking a 1-for-4 but hitting rockets all over the field. Right, Salvi got robbed in the first inning, hit that rocket to third base, and then he hits a bomb to deep left, and then he singles to left. All those hits coming off his bat well over 100 miles per hour. So Salvi seeing it good, feeling good, and I would expect I'm expecting an extra base hit. So if you want to go over 1.5 total bases on Salvi, go for it.
Ooh, I like that. Yeah, all right, Vern, I like the way you're feeling. So real quick, today Lugo gets the win. We're off the next couple of days. It sets up Reagans on Saturday, Lugo on Monday in New York. I mean, you can't have it any better than that.
No. And much like this series, you're going to have a formidable opponent in game one, someone that is just as good as Cole Reagans. But then after that, with all due respect to Carlos Rodon or Clark Schmidt, whoever else they want to throw out there, Seth Lugo's better, Michael Wacha's better, they're more experienced, and the Royals are going to step in, again, chest out and step into a ballpark that is dripping with anxiety, dripping with nervousness, and the Royals should be playing with some more house money.
And the Royals, you know what? I'll tell you what, we'll see you in the ALCS because I think they match up great with the Yankees. I know they didn't do so good in the regular season, but it's all about pitching, and if you can run Lugo and Reagans out there, I mean, with the way that the off days are staggered and everything, Vern, Cole Reagans could get two starts and possibly Lugo too.
Well, then, then there's no reason to feel any sort of intimidation or any sort of how you should feel is the same way your father or your grandfather felt about George and the boys going into the Bronx back in the 70s.
All right, Vern, enjoy the extended long On Deck show today on 96.5 The Fan. We'll be waiting to hear
you
from you.
You enjoy it.
Oh,
I need you to enjoy it.
Come on, man.
I hope the fans are enjoying it, Vern. Like, enough with the woe is me attitude. It's time to embrace this. This is a winning ball club.
Yeah, your voice attached to an extension has already got me there, Vern. So enjoy the rest of your morning, and we will listen to you at 2 o'clock.
Thanks, buddy.
Love you, brother. Josh Vernon, Royals insider there here on 96.5 The Fan. The future is bright, and also you have a chance at tickets to see Seinfeld and Gaffigan. We do all of that on the other side here on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.
You're listening to Fesco and Dusty on your new home for K-State Athletics, 96.5 The Fan.